Hola, bienvenidos al podcast de Patria España. Mi nombre es Iñaki y hoy me acompaña Javier Almendros,
Buenas, chicos.
Aníbal de la Fuente,
Buenas tardes.
Juan Valerdi,
¿Qué tal, chicos?
Víctor Tárraga
Buenas tardes.
y tenemos un invitado especial, a Evan Lázar. Welcome, Evan.
¿Qué tal?
Oh, good.
Yeah,
Good.
a little bit. Un poco.
Yeah, very good, very good. Well, so, Evan, tell to all the people which is your podcast and when they can find you.
Sure, yeah, you can find me on Twitter at EZLazar. It's EZ, LAZAR, Z as in Zachary, which is my middle name, hence the EZ. And my podcast is the Patriots All 22 podcast. It is in English, but for people that speak both languages, we go very, very in depth, X's and O's, details of the game, breaking down the players, breaking down the games, and all that kind of stuff. So we have a good time on that. And make sure to check out our CLNS YouTube channel and our website, clns.com, for all sorts of Patriots coverage there as well.
Okay, first of all, we have a very big discussion about all the members of the podcast. And because we trade down at the 23 pick, and we see a video that Patriots.com upload to Twitter, and we think that Justin Jefferson was the pick. What do you think about it?
I think you guys are spot on. I had the same exact takeaway from that call that they posted. I was actually surprised that they posted as much as they did from the interaction with Nick Caserio and Bill Belichick for that exact reason. I'm almost certain that if Justin Jefferson had still been on the board at 23 and didn't go to Minnesota at 22, he'd be a New England Patriot. They loved him before the draft. Obviously all the same reasons why we all loved him as, watching it from observing from the outside of the league, the ability to run routes both inside and outside, the quickness at the top of the route to create separation, the hands, just the polish of him overall, just a very well-versed route runner and a guy that's extremely experienced and has production at a very, very good school at LSU. So there's a lot to really love about him as a prospect. It seemed to me like it was either Jefferson or trade down. And as you said, as soon as Nick Caserio got word that Minnesota was taking Jefferson, Bill said, "All right, go ahead with the trade." And they traded back with the Chargers.
You can imagine that an LSU fan like me, if he were drafted by New England, that could be a dream, but
That's the
there's no way.
draft. That's the way it works. Jefferson was my guy from the very beginning of this draft process that I would love to have seen here for the reasons why I laid out, but mostly just because his route running technique, how advanced he is as a route runner, really puts him in a different category from early round receivers that they have taken in the past. A guy like N'Keal Harry, who obviously they took last year, has a lot more, a longer ways to go for him to be pro ready as a route runner. Whereas Jefferson, I really felt like could have been a plug and play starter here and just a guy that they could have drafted on draft day. And then come September, week one, he's out there as one of your starting receivers. So it's a bummer that he didn't make it there. We were so close. We were one spot away, but that's the way the draft works. That's how it, kind of falls sometimes.
Well, so our first choice was at number 37, and that is Kyle Duggar. We all clear that he has great physique, and he have a lot of speed in open field, but we think, or we have the doubts about the way he play, if he can translate it to the NFL, and what kind of evolution need to about the reading of the game, or how they play.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the biggest thing for him is whenever you make the jump from the D2 level to the NFL level, the speed of the game is a big difference at the two different levels. You know, the NFL, you're going to be playing against bigger, faster, stronger guys that might not be quite as athletic as Kyle Duggar all the time, because he is truly a freak athlete. But for the most part, every NFL athlete's a freak athlete. None of these guys are poor athletes, obviously. So he's going to have to get used to the speed of the game, the level of competition. And then what you were saying a little bit, I think, in your question was just about how he's a little bit slow to react to things at sometimes out there, for especially as a zone player from the deep part of the field, when he's scanning and trying to find where the quarterback's going to go with the football, and it's his job to break on the ball. He is a little bit slow, and he doesn't have that kind of anticipation to jump routes and to really arrive at the catch point or arrive when the ball arrives sooner rather than later. And I think you see it a little bit in his man coverage as well. He has a tendency to get a little bit grabby, to use his hands a little bit too much at the top of the route. I think that one thing that you see with that is that once he becomes better at reading releases and reading route stems by receivers and understanding route combinations and what their intention is going to be before the ball is even snapped, he'll be able to anticipate those routes a little bit better. So, you know, he'll see with the route release at the line of scrimmage, okay, this guy is, you know, setting up for a slant, or he's setting up for a post. And then he'll be able to get out in front of it and anticipate it. And instead of reacting to everything, he'll already be one step ahead. And I think that's the next part of his game that needs to develop, because he certainly has all the physical tools to dominate at any level of football that he plays at.
If you need to choose only one, what do you prefer, Delpit or Duggar?
I had Delpit as higher in my rankings before the draft, and I want to be consistent with that, that I do think the level of competition, Delpit's 2018 season, where he was a unanimous first-team All-American, I think that those things you look at and you say, okay, Delpit had the better college resume. You know, he had the better resume going into the draft. But I think the reason why the Patriots picked Duggar over Delpit was the open field tackling. That was a big issue for Delpit in college. He missed 20 tackles in his 2019 season through 14 games, which is not what you want to see. And it's certainly something not that Bill Belichick does not want from his safeties, which they really ask a lot of their defensive backs, their corners and their safeties. All of the expectation there is for them to be excellent open field tacklers, so that a 20-yard gain doesn't become a 65-yard gain, right? So you can limit big plays. And the one thing that we saw with Delpit is that he really struggled at the actual point of the tackle. He got there in time. He had a great setup into the tackle. He'd wait for the guy to make a move, and then he would just lunge and he would kind of whiff at the ball carrier. And that led to a lot of unnecessary missed tackles all over his tape. So my guess is the physicality and sort of just the ability to tackle in the open field put Duggar a little bit ahead of Delpit on their board.
Well, so the next pick was Josh Uche. All of us, we are very high with him.
Yeah.
So, how are you with
him? Yeah, no, I love the pick. I think the biggest thing with Uche is that he's very versatile. And I think that was a sort of a theme of all three of the picks at the top of the draft for the Patriots. And then also Dalton Keene, who I'm sure we'll get to at some point too. He is a very versatile player as well. So the ability to kind of just be interchangeable at the linebacker spot. He can line up on the edge outside of the tackle and rush the passer, or hold up at the point of attack against the run. Or he can play off the line of scrimmage, which is called an off-ball linebacker. On the line of scrimmage would be an on-ball backer on the line. Off the line is inside linebacker. Think more of like your Dante Hightower type, where he's back there and he's reacting to running plays and filling gaps in the running game, and then also dropping into coverage as a zone defender or man coverage defender. Uche's ability to do all of those things, and then rush also from the inside too. He can stand up over the guard or stand up over the center and give you push up the middle as well. all those things stand out as that versatile trait that Bill Belichick's going to love. He's a chess piece that you can move all around the front seven and create disruption from multiple different spots. The other thing is that he's in a very explosive and plays the game extremely fast. When you watch him play, he looks like he's got his hair on fire sometimes, similar to like a guy like Chase Winovich, where he's just running around the field all the time at 100 miles an hour, 100% effort, sideline to sideline. And that's a very intriguing quality as well. So I think the explosiveness off the ball to really get off and get into tackles and turn the corner to rush the passer with a great speed rush, and then the ability also then to drop into coverage and to play in space, offers them someone that's similar, not necessarily in build because he's much smaller than a Jamie Collins, but offers a very similar skill set to someone like a Jamie Collins did for them last year.
Well, so the pick 87 was Anfernee Genis. We have many doubts about he can improve physically.
Yeah.
But we know that he has a very good, he's very technical. He uses very good his hands, and he's very strictly when he plays.
Yeah.
So, do you think is the more safe pick of the draft?
It's a very good scouting report. Yeah, he's the type of guy that is very technically sound. And he's 256 pounds and 6'2", so he's a little bit bigger than Uche. So they actually complement each other. In my mind, they complement each other extremely well, especially on the edge, because you got a guy in Uche who's probably going to play on the weak side of the formation, so opposite the tight end. But then you bring in a guy like Jennings who can play over the tight end and still be able to hold up against double team blocks or move blocks by those tight ends that are coming off the ball and trying to push him out. He's going to have that ability to post up and set the edge because he's got really long arms and he knows how to use them, and he knows how to use his hands to get inside tackle's chest or tight end's chest and then extend his arms and kind of just hold up or post up, as a lot of coaches call it, and just hold there at the point of attack and set an edge and force the running back into the middle of the defense where all of his teammates are there to help him make the tackle. So he also has a great ability to shed those blocks, as you mentioned, with his hand strength and with his hand technique. That's what led to all those tackles for loss that you see for him at Alabama last year, where he led the team in tackles for loss. A lot of stack, which is, you know, just pushing the guy out, bench press him off of you, create that separation, and shed. Just throw him down with your hands. You know, use a nice push-pull method or just a swipe method to the left or the right to just throw him down or off of you, and then go ahead and make the tackle. And he fits more of the mold of like a Kyle Van Noy, who played on the line of scrimmage 90% of the time last year, played on that strong side edge position. And I think that Jennings can really step in, maybe not all the way in year one, but a little bit in year one, and be pretty much ready to do that right away in some capacity. He won't be able to do everything that Van Noy was able to do, because Van Noy really was a very veteran, smart, savvy football player, but he's certainly going to have a baseline skill to be able to hold down that role. And I could see Jennings almost getting onto the field a little bit faster than guys like Duggar and Uche because of the experience in the SEC at Alabama and because of how fundamentally sound he is. And being in that Saban defense, it is very similar what they ask you to do at Alabama to what they ask you to do in New England, obviously because of the longstanding relationship between the two head coaches.
In 2018, Jennings usually play in Alabama like a spy, and that role looks like he can play in New England, and probably the best football he plays was not in 2019.
Correct. So in 2017, he had a great year for Alabama, and he tore his ACL in his knee at the end of the 2017 season in the college football playoff in the semifinal against Clemson. So that was a major injury for him, obviously. He came back in 2018, was ready for the season, but didn't really look 100% like himself, I would say. Really until midway through 2019 is when he kind of was able to ramp it back up. So I would actually say his best year at Alabama was probably 2017 before the knee injury, but you saw glimpses of that athleticism and that really with the knee injury that he had, it's the short area agility, the ability to move laterally side to side. That knee, when you can't have that flexibility in your knee to do that, it kind of hurts athletes. But he sort of got that back a little bit in 2019. But mainly, I think that when I watch him, he's more just a right place at the right time type of player, and not necessarily someone that jumps out at you with his athleticism the same way that like Duggar and Uche do.
Well, so we will change to other players, and these players are Asiasi and Dalton King. They are both tight end, but it's very obviously that there's two kind of players. First, Asiasi is more a tight end.
Yes.
But yeah. King is the halfback that we don't have since Aaron Hernandez, probably.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, listen, if you want to use Gronk and Hernandez, obviously both of those players are all-world talents, and they're very difficult for guys to live up to those types of expectations. But with using those guys as prototypes or just as examples, Asiasi's the Gronk and Keen's the Hernandez, right? And I think the biggest thing that when you watch with Asiasi is that as a receiver, he offers them a lot more juice, is what I like to call it, explosiveness, burst, speed, up the field vertically than Ben Watson or Matt LaCosse or Ryan Izzo or any of those guys did for them last year. So his ability to get up the seam or get up the defense vertically and attack them down the field, it's impressive. It's something that really stands out on his tape, especially off of play action where you can get that second level of the defense, the linebackers, to creep up a little bit, and then you hit them behind the linebackers with that seam route or a crosser. We see the Patriots do this all the time with their guys in the middle of the field off of play action. The other thing that stands out about Asiasi is his ability to run routes from what's called detached from the formation, which is in the slot or out wide. He can do that a little bit, and he's got great foot speed and quickness at the top of his route to separate in a short area type of way. So he can get off of a linebacker, he can get off of a safety with cuts at the top of the route that are pretty effective. And I think that just to round out his skill set, he has a long way to go in terms of his technique as a blocker. That's the one thing that I will say, is that his blocking technique is extremely, it's a work in progress, let me put you that way. But he's got the chops, right? He's got the physicality. He's 257 pounds. He's got the effort and the willingness to block. And once you can kind of hone in on the technique, he should be an effective inline blocker. So a guy that can put his hand in the dirt next to the tackle and drive people off the ball or take guys out of gap. So he has the more prototypical tight end mold of inline, hand in the dirt, get off the ball, get up the seam, get over the defense on a crossing route, that sort of thing, and then also the blocking chops. So I think that that's a nice combination to work with, and they have a decent player that has shown things at UCLA that he's going to be asked to do in New England.
We speak about Asiasi that we hardly ever seen him because he has the letter of intention with Michigan.
Right.
And then he translates to UCLA. So we think that Asiasi has the low floor.
Yeah.
But we think he's one of the players that he can improve most from all the draft.
Agreed. Yeah. I think that Asiasi, listen, he went to Michigan. He was there for 1 year, and he actually transferred back to UCLA to be closer to home because he's from Northern California, and Michigan's not close to Northern California on the map. So he wanted to be back closer to his family, to his parents. So he transferred back to UCLA. Then it took him a season to kind of get his bearings at UCLA. And then his last year at UCLA under Chip Kelly, he really blossomed into the player that ended up being drafted in the third round. If you look at his production, though, in 1 year, and you compare it to, let's say, Cole Kmet's production in his entire career at Notre Dame, Asiasi almost outproduced him in one season at UCLA. So he had, I think it was 44 catches, over 600 yards, and four touchdowns. That was about Cole Kmet's stat line in three seasons for the Irish at Notre Dame. So this is a guy that can really contribute and play in the passing game early on in his career and be sort of a X factor in that regard, where teams that opposing defensive coordinators and opposing defenses are going to have a matchup player ready for him. You know, in New England, that guy would probably be like a Patrick Chung. You know, they're going to have a safety or a linebacker or an athletics, you know, linebacker, obviously, that can stick with Asiasi in space and be able to guard him in pass catching situations. I think that that's probably where he immediately makes an impact and immediately gets on the field as a rookie.
Evan, in the pick 159, we pick the kicker of Marshall.
Yeah.
Do you think we draft this kicker because he kicked in bad weather, like in Foxborough, in front of the rest of these GR kickers?
Yeah, so I think that the bad weather kicking is always something that you have to look for. I live in Boston in the Foxborough area, and I can tell you that the winters here, as I'm sure you guys might know, are pretty nasty. You know, it's not just snow, and that's like kind of the conventional wisdom. It's cold, it's rainy, it's snowy, it's wet conditions, it's windy conditions. I think the wind in Gillette Stadium especially gets very underrated. It's a wind tunnel in that stadium, especially on the open side of the stadium where the lighthouse is. There's a lot of wind that comes in and out of that stadium. So the ability to kick in inclement weather, to not necessarily be in a dome or in this perfect type of setting, and be able to kick the ball accurately is certainly something that Rowasser did at Marshall that stood out to the Patriots. I think the other thing that stood out to them is his acumen and his ability to rise to the occasion in clutch situations. He was 14 for 14 in his career in the fourth quarter and in overtime. Didn't miss a kick in sort of those big moments when you needed to have it or a game-winning situation. So his clutchness, sort of his mental makeup as a kicker, is extremely important because these guys can be fragile. And you miss one kick in a big moment, or you miss a couple of kicks in a game, and that could ruin a career. That could be it for kickers in the NFL. So to have that sort of confidence, that sort of moxie to be able to stand up in big moments and make clutch kicks and also kick in bad weather, and then at 6'3", 230 pounds, he's basically a linebacker kicking. So he's got great size, and he's got a great leg as a result, a really big leg that can make over 50-yard field goals. He made a 53-yard game winner against Western Kentucky in a rainstorm last year in 2019, and that's sort of the kick that's made the rounds on Twitter and stuff like that as like the kick that sort of sums up why the Patriots drafted him.
And why do you think he's under the radar of the rest of the team?
The rest of the kick, why he was under the radar compared to the rest of the kickers, you mean?
Yeah,
it's a good question. So he was actually ranked, I think, in some scouting sites as maybe like the ninth best kicker in this draft or something like that. And, you know, you have the Tyler Basses and the Rodrigo Blankenships. I think the reason why he was ranked so low is because his actual kicking accuracy in college was a bit sporadic. He was around, I think, 80%, so about 75-80% accuracy on his field goals. So not great, not exactly where you want to be, but I think that the Patriots are confident that they can work with him on that respect and get him to be more consistent, and that his ceiling and his ability and his acumen to handle pressure situations was a lot higher, or at least battle tested, than some of these other guys where we haven't really seen them have as many opportunities as Rowasser did to make kicks in big situations and in big games.
Ivan, going back to the Asiasi topic, it's a pick that cost us like a lot of power in the draft. We draft our two fourths and a sixth of the last year for a player that actually we don't have a lot of information. Do you think that Chap Kelly, Chap Kelly experience with him got a lot of power for Bill Belichick to decide to make that payment, paying that high?
Yeah, so for Asiasi, they came out right and said it after the draft, after the pick. Nick Caserio, the Bill Belichick's director of player personnel, assistant GM, whatever you want to call him, he said right afterwards that Chip Kelly was an excellent resource in vetting Asiasi and figuring out what kind of guy he was off the field and on the field and on the practice field and in the film room and all that kind of stuff. So they got the thumbs up, if you will, from Chip Kelly to make the pick. I think they similarly got the same thumbs up from Nick Saban to make the and Franny Jennings pick. So when you look at this draft, the one thing that stands out about a lot of these picks is that because of the coronavirus, which I'm sure we're all dealing with right now, regardless of country, it put a damper on the face-to-face meetings that the teams could get with these players. There was no pro days. There was no top 30 visits. So they didn't have as much face-to-face interaction. So what the Patriots did was they drafted the first three guys that they drafted were all at the Senior Bowl down in Mobile, which is a big event that they put on every year for all the seniors in college football that are entering the NFL draft to showcase their skills. It's an all-star mm-hmm. game for them to showcase their skills. And Bill Belichick was at the Senior Bowl this year and was face to face with all three of the guys that they picked in the beginning of the draft. And then with the fourth pick, Asiasi wasn't a Senior Bowl guy, but he was a Chip Kelly guy. So what you see with the first four picks is that the Patriots have a lot of background with these players. They have a lot of access to them, and they understand who they are as human beings because of either coaching ties or meeting them face to face or whatever the case may be.
And even now that we add two new tight ends to the roster, what do you think is going to happen with Iso, Lacoste, and Watson? Do you think any of them are going to continue? Do you think, what's your point of view on that topic?
Yeah, so Watson is retired again, so he's done with football, at least for the time being, unless he comes out of retirement again, which I don't anticipate that he will. I think that this does spell the end for one of Lacoste or Izzo in New England. My guess is if I had to make a prediction in May, it would probably be the end of Izzo and Lacoste will stick around. As much as Lacoste didn't really give us what we wanted last year in terms of production, he was probably the best tight end that they had on the roster and the guy that was most pro ready to both be a pass catcher and a blocker. So he'll probably end up factoring in there on the tight end depth chart again, I assume. And then really it will probably be Izzo's time will probably be up. They also did bring in some undrafted free agents as well that I think that they're cautiously optimistic could contribute. I mean, a guy like tight end Jake Burt, who they picked up from Boston College here in New England, he got $800,000 guaranteed to him on an undrafted free agent contract, which is one of the higher numbers in the entire league. So he's got a chance to make the team. I think Rashad Berry, who they also signed as an undrafted free agent, has a chance to make the team as a blocking tight end. He's more of like a sixth offensive lineman, not much of a pass catcher, but can definitely move people off the ball as a blocker. So those two guys, I think, have a chance for that third spot. But Asiasi and Keane are both roster locks. They're both making the team because of how highly they were drafted in this past draft. So it's really going to be up for that third spot. And I would assume that Lacoste will win out at the end.
All right. Ivan, just continuing with the Titans discussion, we have two discussions internally here in the group. One, if Asiasi really is a good blocker, just to put it right now in the line for next year. And the other one is that I think nearly all of us think that Dalton King had a bigger ceiling, that a bigger, let's say, expectations for the future than Asiasi. What are your opinions about both?
So I think Asiasi, to me, Asiasi is more of a receiving threat than Keane is at this stage, just because we haven't seen Keane do it. Now, Keane was an 80th percentile athlete. He was the top tester at the combine in Indianapolis among this tight end group. He's the best athlete that was drafted this year at tight end. So he has the physical tools and the athletic ability to be a better receiver. And we saw the moments where he got the ball in his hands and how he can create after the catch as a ball carrier, you know, stiff arms and open field, making people miss in the open field and running down the seam and stuff like that. He has that ability. So I think that that's fun. That's an aspect that they haven't really had all that much in the past. Maybe Aaron Hernandez is kind of the only guy that I can think of that's as elusive as Keen as a tight end, at least by, you know, the position that he's listed by. So I think that he's got a great sort of foundation of blocking effort and just tenacity as a blocker. I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen on Keen's tape just his ability to just blow guys up sometimes, which is really, you know, kind of cool. And then also the ability to create after the catch with the ball in his hands as well. Now, there were flashes on his tape at Virginia Tech of him vertically getting up the field as a route runner, but that's certainly where Asiasi is more polished, and Keen is definitely a work in progress. You know, Bill Belichick said it himself after the draft that Keen is a project. We're starting at square one and we're working our way up with a good foundation of athleticism, but he hasn't done really anything that the Patriots do at a regular consistent level at Virginia Tech in terms of how they're going to use him in the offense. Now, I am optimistic though that they are going to watch. I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen 49ers games and how they use their fullbacks and their tight ends a little bit different than how the Patriots do it. They move it around the formation a lot more. They have these guys coming in motion a lot more. They use a lot of more backfield actions to get them involved. And I think that's what you're going to see in Keen do a little bit more. Is sort of more like a George Kittle or a Kyle Juszczyk in San Francisco than what we saw with, let's say, Gronk here in New England or the tight ends that they had last year.
One question about King. Honestly, I think he can add something that Develin gives to the team, and is leadership. Do you agree with us?
With Keen, leadership. Interesting. Yeah, I think that what he does do is he's a high effort player. You know, every snap, that guy is going 150 miles an hour, balls to the wall. And that's obviously something that is contagious and something that the team really looks for more than maybe we do. You know, I think a lot of us can kind of get caught up in the flashy plays or the athleticism or all that kind of stuff and don't really think about the human being. Who is this guy as a person? What is he going to bring to the locker room? What is he going to bring to the environment, the Patriot way? What's he going to add to that equation? I think Keen, listening to what his coaches had to say about him, reading up about what his coaches had to say about him, he works just as hard in the weight room, on the practice field, in the film room as he does on game day. So he's got that Patriot type of makeup of doing things the right way, doing them at as best of his abilities, and doing them outside of the game so that he can be the best that he can be once the game does come around.
Well, so in the last rounds, we have too many players from the offensive line. And we think that each other, they can add something into the OL group. How many of them do you think that will end at the 53 spot roster?
Right, so not all three of these guys, at least I shouldn't say that, but I'd be a surprise if all three of these guys make the 53 at the end of camp. There's just not enough spots for all of them to make it. But I think the guy that really stood out to me is Onwenu from Michigan, the guard, who's told me he was 344 pounds. He played last year at 368 pounds. So this is a huge guy. He's a forklift, a bulldozer. He's just going to blow people off the line of scrimmage and really has impressive tape of him just moving guys very far, you know, 10 yards off the line of scrimmage, things like that. But he also has great footwork and actually has got pretty good foot speed for a guy of that size. So he can combination block, which is when you double team at the line of scrimmage and you climb to the linebacker. He can do that. He can pull. So he can pull out in front of a running play and then he can kick a guy out on a counter or use a power and get up to the mic on the second level and, you know, use him in that way. And he's such a big bulldozer, such a big force that he really has some jaw dropping blocks on his tape where he's just really just leveling guys. And that's always fun to watch for an offensive lineman. I also really like Dustin Woodard, the center they picked up from Memphis. He has the exact same sort of athletic profile. Not going to say he's going to turn into David Andrews, but from a size, speed, measurable standpoint, size, athleticism, he's built exactly like David Andrews was coming out of Georgia a few years ago. So undersized, but very athletic center, very positionally sound center. So I think that they look at him and they look at Nwenu as two guys that could back up spots immediately in the NFL. And then Heron has a much higher ceiling than Nwenu does, or maybe even Woodard too, because of his athleticism and his explosiveness and his foot speed. But he's got issues with power. He has difficulty setting or anchoring at the point of attack, and he gets run through a lot of the times by bigger guys because he doesn't necessarily have that kind of power behind his pads to hold up. So I think that that will be sort of the conversion for him. But I really think that all three of these guys do offer something, and that's, you know, obviously why they ended up drafting them and taking three offensive linemen with their last four picks instead of maybe looking at a wide receiver or a quarterback or something like that.
Well, so this year we signed a lot of undrafted free agents, and we have a lot of candidates for be part of the roster. So do you think this year we will sign another undrafted free agent from the 17th? 17th year
in a row. Yeah.
Yes, I know. It's one of the fun storylines of camp to see who's going to be the next guy to extend the streak. I think the streak is going to continue just because Bill Belichick really doesn't care where you came from. He doesn't care if you're a first round pick. He doesn't care if you're an undrafted guy. If you can play and you're the best player, you're going to make the team. And more times than not, the evaluators, quite frankly, that make the draft picks get things wrong sometimes, or guys slip through the cracks and they just lose, you know, sight of certain guys. If you're looking at for candidates, though, first of all, I threw up his thread on my Twitter yesterday if people want to check it out, but Jeff Thomas, the wide receiver from Miami, he can really play. Now, he had multiple suspensions at Miami. He was actually kicked off the team in 2018 for violating team rules. He came back in 2019 and was suspended again for two more games during the season. But when you watch him play, he plays the game sort of like Tyreek Hill or an Antonio Brown or one of these this smaller, explosive wideouts that can really create both after the catch with the ball in their hands as explosive playmakers or take the top off the defense as speedsters. He can also get over the middle of the field on crossing routes and things like that as well. But it's really that explosiveness and the suddenness at the line of scrimmage. His route releases, he's very, very quick, and he's a very good lateral mover to break press coverage. So guys are going to try to get in his face and jam him, and he's got that ability to just kind of slip out of it and just find his way out of that confrontation and then get up the field with that explosiveness and speed. He only ran a 4.45 at the 4. I say only, that's still very, very fast, but it's not eye-poppingly fast. But I think he actually plays faster than that. He plays more closer to like a 4.4 flat. So he's a very, very explosive, very fast wide receiver, something that the Patriots certainly could use. The other guy I would look at is Nick Coe from Auburn, who I expected to get drafted, but another sort of guy that has a background or has some baggage with him. He was more not necessarily known for getting suspended or anything like that. He quite frankly liked to fall asleep a lot. He'd fall asleep in meetings, he'd fall asleep at the practice field, they'd be in the film room and you'd see Nick Coe snoring in the back. You know, that sort of stuff is the problem with him. But in terms of his ability and makeup on the field, he's a big edge defender. He's 6'5", 280 pounds, which fits their defensive end mold perfectly. He's got the length, he's got the power, and he's got a nice, you know, kind of bit of explosiveness off the ball to be a long sort of edge setting edge defender. And I think that he's a sort of the guy that plays the position the way that they want it to be played. JJ Taylor, the running back from Arizona, is kind of like a little Deion Lewis type of player who is very shifty, very agile in short areas, very good at sort of making guys miss in the open field. Not necessarily the fastest guy, only ran a 4.61, so he's not going to run away from anybody, but he's very, very good in short areas, and he's got great balance and power despite his size at 5'5", 185 to bounce out of tackles and keep moving forward. The last one I would say would be Miles Bryant, who's a cornerback. He's another guy that was pretty high on a lot of boards just from the internet, you know, media type boards. He can play safety or play corner. He's got some versatility to him. He's more of a physical guy in the open field and a coverage guy, but I think that he's got some ability to him as well. So those are the three guys or four guys that I would start with. But Jeff Taylor from Miami, there will be a lot of buzz come August with him here in New England and everywhere in the world that has Patriots fans because of just how he is on the field, how fast he plays, and how explosive he is with the ball in his hands and the ability to take the top off. He's going to star in training camp if he can stay on the field and keep his head on straight.
Ivan, just taking into account the things you were talking about previously about the 49ers and the copycat lead we have in the NFL, you were talking about Jeff Thomas. From my perspective, this is my opinion, maybe that we were begging on bigger wide receivers in the past, but this year I think there are a tendency, not only in the Patriots, just to take here smaller and quick guys just to stretch the field. Do you think this is in the drafted profiles they are looking for this Tyreek Hill copycat profile or something like that? But is this your opinion too?
Well, yeah, they're certainly added, you know, last year, you're right. They added guys like N'Keal Harry and Demaryius Thomas, and they brought back Josh Gordon, and they had all these 6'3" monsters out there on the outside. I think the guy that everybody's really sleeping on this offseason is Damari Bird, who they signed from Arizona. He can really run. He ran a 4.28 in the 40-yard dash at his pro day a few years ago, and he runs good routes, and he has good releases at the line of scrimmage also. He fits your sort of copycat league type of archetype of a smaller, shiftier, faster wide receiver on the outside that the team is very, very high on. There's a lot of people in that building that think that he's an upgrade over Philip Dorsett because of the fact that he is more laterally able to move laterally than just linearly. You know, Philip Dorsett's the type of guy that he's great in a straight line. You don't want him to cut. You don't want him to have to work back to the quarterback often. But if you can get him going in a straight line, then he can be effective. Whereas with Bird, he can go in a straight line and he can go horizontally or laterally also. So I think that that's sort of what they're looking for in an upgrade with him is guys that are looser in the lower body to be able to make sharp cuts and change directions quickly and be a little bit more elusive and sort of jitterbug-like than being someone that's really just going to be a straight line speed like a Philip Dorsett.
Okay. So after the draft, it seems like Bill Belichick trusting Stidham. Do you think Tom Brady didn't want the same thing to happen to him as to Drew Bledsoe? And that's one of the reasons that he go out from New England?
I think so. I think that Tom Brady wants to be in control of his own destiny from this point on, and he felt like Bill Belichick was sort of just waiting for the next guy to fall into his lap to have that smooth transition. And as soon as that next guy came along, whether it was Jimmy Garoppolo or now Jared Stidham, that Belichick was going to just move on and Brady would kind of be left there, you know, at the altar without a team, without a team to go to. So he wanted to take control of the situation. I think the other thing with Brady, too, is that they're both, Belichick and Brady, are both such incredible competitors, and they're so competitive that it almost got too easy being together. It almost got too sort of simple being together where, you know, I like make the comparison, like I see, you know, your soccer leagues, for example, with like Ronaldo at Madrid and Messi at Barcelona, like how hard can it be for these guys? They win the league every single year, right? It's sort of like that with the Patriots where like with these two guys together, it got to the point where it was like, what's the challenge? What's the next sort of thing pushing me to be great? Because I'm in the Super Bowl every single year if I stay here, and that's awesome, but I don't know if I can reach that next level here because it's just we've got it down to such a science that it's just kind of boring at this point. And I think that Brady really needed that push to continue to play till he's 45. He needed that push to find that next challenge, to find that next frontier to overcome because he had already accomplished everything that he possibly could here with Belichick.
Okay. Ivan, do you think in this draft, Bill Belichick has considered the problem of coronavirus to the next season?
Repeat that one more time. Sorry.
Bill Belichick has considered the problems of coronavirus to the next season?
I think that what he did consider was the familiarity with the prospects. I don't know. I don't think the teams are quite operating yet about the coronavirus, you know, one way or another. But I think what they are, what you are seeing is that you don't want to bring in guys that you aren't familiar with because you didn't meet with them at their pro day, or you didn't talk to them in the top 30 visit, or you didn't get a chance to see them at the combine. And really, the combine and the Senior Bowl were the only two opportunities to see guys face to face. And that's why a lot of the guys the Patriots drafted this year were guys that they met with or saw at those two events. So I think that there was a little bit, the board was a little bit even smaller than it usually is because they didn't want to draft guys that they literally had no background information on. But other than that, I don't think that the coronavirus played a huge, you know, role in their thinking in terms of who they were drafting. It certainly didn't with a guy like Duggar because he's already 24 years old. So if they lose a season to the coronavirus, he's going to be 25-year-old rookie, which is definitely on the older side. So I wouldn't say that they pick players in terms of like age or, you know, what spots they were addressing because of the coronavirus, but they definitely wanted to have familiar faces, and they made sure to pick guys with either Belichick ties or they saw at the Senior Bowl or they saw at the combine, and there weren't so much off the radar type of prospects selected this year.
Mm-hmm. What can we wait from with Steve Ham, what can we think about he can do for the team?
It's a good question. You know, there's not a huge sample, right? We're talking about four regular season passes, and four preseason games to judge our entire opinion on the guy. And that's difficult. Now, going back to his college career, the senior season or his last season at Auburn, there was certainly some issues with him on tape, with accuracy, with poise in the pocket. You know, he would get flustered back there and he would leave the pocket too early because he was expecting pressure, or he would just feel uncomfortable behind his line. And that's not what you want, obviously, from the quarterback position. But then you fast forward to training camp and to, you know, his time with the Patriots so far, and it was a complete 180 from college. Now he looks comfortable back there. He's not leaving the pocket early. He's really trusting his blocking and staying patient behind the line, and that's great to see. And then you also saw that really right away, even going back to minicamp in June before training camp and the pads got on, his downfield accuracy and ball placement was way better than I think he got credit for in college. So I think that those are the sort of the things that you look at with him are downfield ball placement, arm talent, the ability to make all the throws, to throw the ball down the field accurately, and then also sort of this cerebralness about him that he does have a good ability of understanding coverages, reading defenses, figuring out the right read and the progression and where to go with the football, and sort of playing the position the way that the Patriots want him to play it. You know, the Patriots don't want hero ball. They don't want guys going out there running around, scrambling in a circle and then throwing a 60-yard bomb down the field. That's not consistent to them. That's not reliable. What they want is consistency. They want you to make the right decision, stay within the structure of the offense, and then make the right decision with the football. And that's what what Tom Brady's done for the last 20 years, and that's why he's got multiple MVPs and six Super Bowls, is because he let himself function within the system, within the scheme, and didn't try to get too far outside of it or stray too far outside of it to be his own thing. And I think that's the biggest thing with Stidham, is that trust the system, trust your playmakers around you, trust your offensive line, and just make the right decision with the football and things will be all right.
Okay.
Even now that you speak about Stidham, there are rumors that say that maybe New England might be interested on Andy Dalton. I don't know what's your position about that. And then in this group, we're big fans of Cam Newton.
Yeah.
So wondering that
Victor.
Yeah, Victor is a great fan. Both guys are in the market. Do you think that the Bill Belichick might have any of them in mind? I guess at least to put some competence on Stidham, taking into account that Hoyer might not be the one that competes against Steedham. That's my first question. And the second one is about the running back position. We didn't draft any running back this year, but we drafted Damian Harris last year. However, he didn't play almost anything. What's the role that we can expect from him? There are people that are considering him like the next running back, but now we have J.J. Taylor in the as a Yutfa. What do you think about it?
Well, whoever the Cam Newton fan is, raise their hand or whatever, because that's a good thing. Yeah, good job. All right. Cam is one of my favorite athletes of the last 10 years since I've been watching football, just an incredible football player. I think the unfortunate thing with Cam is two things. One, because of his injury history, especially with his elbow, and the fact that teams can't do a physical on him before they sign him, it's been a big problem for his free agency. He would be signed by now if it wasn't for the coronavirus. The issue is that these teams can't get their doctors to check him out and clear him medically, so nobody really knows what his injury situation or his health is like right now. On top of that, in New England, the issue with his fit is obviously he's a far, far cry from anything that they have with Tom Brady. So this is a completely different animal that we're talking about, a completely different style of offense that we're talking about here. We're going from a mobile quarterback that needs to run an offense that features his legs to a stationary quarterback in Tom Brady. So that's a big difference in terms of what they would have to change from a schematic standpoint. And when you're looking for a backup, you want the backup to at least be relatively similar to the starter, because you can't run two different systems, right? You can only have one system in place. So if you have to keep changing back and forth between the backup and the starter at practice, things get confusing. So I think that's a big part of it. There's also sort of the off-field or non-football related stuff with Cam that, you know, he's not always been the friendliest to the media or the friendliest to people in the city that he's in. And he does great charity work and all that kind of stuff. I'm not trying to, you know, throw shade on him, but in terms of how he handles himself or how he carries himself, it's not necessarily the Patriot way. So I think those are some of the things that you look at for Cam is the scheme fit, the personality fit, and also the fact that he's been injured. You don't really know if, you know, what his health is like. In terms of Andy Dalton, back before free agency, the one name that everybody kept on spitting out there for the Patriots as a veteran quarterback option before we knew Hoyer was available was Andy Dalton. Biggest reason why is that Dalton has that quick release, hits his back foot, ball is out. Very good decision maker, although the turnovers are not always very good. But his accuracy and his turnover, you know, the ability to, you know, really not manage those turnovers, it's a struggle for him at times there. But he has one of the fastest releases in the NFL. Is 2.39 seconds, I think, was the stat last year, which tied for Drew Brees at the fastest release, you know, time to throw. So snap to throwing the football, the fastest of any quarterback in the league. So if you put him in a short horizontal passing game like New England's offense, and you just ask him to get the ball out based off of his read and make the right decision with the football, and Andy Dalton certainly fits those kind of boxes. He checks those boxes very, very well. And to me, he presents them with an upgrade over Hoyer. We're not bringing Andy Dalton here necessarily to take Stidham's job and to be the starter, but at least it's a better backup option or a more reliable veteran option than the guy like Hoyer, who's a career backup, and you kind of know that he's not going to be anything more than that. To answer your question about the running backs, I think that really that's the one position group besides maybe cornerback that the Patriots are the most set at. They have all sorts of bodies there. I mean, they still have Sony. They still have Rex Burkhead. They still have Brandon Bolden. They have Damian Harris. They have J.J. Taylor. I mean, that's a very loaded spot on this depth chart on the roster. With Harris last year, that was the biggest issue, was just that he couldn't get on the field over the veterans that were already on the team, James White, Burkhead being the main ones. He couldn't find playing time with those guys being still on the roster. So my question is actually for the Patriots going into the training camp is, are they going to continue to pay Rex Burkhead, who's making $4 or $5 million a year, or are they going to cut him and just give his snaps to Damian Harris? I think that's a possibility. That's how you could see them get a little bit cheaper at that position, because they do have so much invested there at the running back spot, and also just are tied up against the cap in general. They can save some cap space by cutting Rex Burkhead. They have Damian Harris waiting in the wings. I think that that's his best way to getting on the field immediately, because he does have some talent. He has good kind of vision between the tackles. He has a great innate feel skill of finding space in tight quarters and just getting himself out of trouble and setting up his blocks and running off of his blocks. He's a very fundamentally sound runner. He reminds me a lot of Sony. That's pretty much his running style is very similar to Sony's, but maybe he can offer a little bit more in the passing game than Sony's been able to do at the NFL level. Certainly as a screen receiver as well. You know, Damian Harris really did that at a very high level, run those running back screens that the Patriots love to do. Damian Harris did that at a very high level at Alabama. So he runs a lot like Sony. He plays a lot like Sony. So maybe they do view those guys a little bit redundant. And if there was an injury to Sony, maybe Damian Harris would, you know, be more of a feature in the offense. But it's really the competition between him and Burkhead that I'm looking at this summer.
Well, so I think we will end here because we kidnapped you too much time.
That's okay. No, I had a great time. I'm glad you guys did.
Thank you so much to be here with us. It's an honor. It's a pleasure. And we hope that we can speak with you again in the future.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much, Evan.
No problem. Anytime, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Guys, have a good one. Stay safe, everybody.
Stay safe.
Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.